Let's face it, romantic relationships tend to consume much of our collective emotional energy. Sometimes we don't know where to find the answers. I mean, heck, often I don't even know the questions.
Why is it important for women to support other women? Because it's what the guys do.
A couple of years ago, I launched Pink Wisdom in my living room here in New York City.
The best relationship advice I ever received was actually when I was married. I am happily divorced now.
To create a space for lovelorn women to discuss relationships, love, sex, breakups.
How do men respond to strong women and how does it affect?
How do you get your self-esteem and your confidence back?
All that good stuff. I would bring in these incredible relationship experts to answer questions and offer advice based on their experiences.
One of the best pieces of advice that I have ever received is actually from my mom.
After you have been dumped, the best way to get your self-esteem back is to fall in love with your own life.
So not only do I get to ask these experts the questions that you would be asking them if you were to meet them in person, I get to pass on all their well-earned words of wisdom to you.
I am enough. I am worthy of love.
One of the most dangerous, painful, and wonderful things about human existence is that we fall deeply in love with people. It gets us tremendous joy and pleasure. It also causes us, in the long run, a lot of trouble.
Hey there, lovely listeners. Welcome back to the Pink Wisdom Podcast. Today, we have got a real treat for you. Our guest is none other than Dr. John Jacobs. He's a New York-based psychiatrist and the author of the eye-opening book, All You Need Is Love and Other Lies About Marriage, How to Save Your Marriage Before It's Too Late. Now, let me tell you, Dr. John Jacobs isn't just your run-of-the-mill therapist. He's my former therapist. But don't worry, I'm not going to lay on the couch and spill my secrets. Today, anyway. Instead, we're diving into a topic that's as modern as a smartphone, but just as tricky. Why the heck is it so tough to stay hitched in the 21st century, and what can we do about it? Dr. Jacobs, though, he's got some juicy insights. He's here to tell us that modern marriages are like that souffle you tried to make, but you never quite got it right. Why, you ask? Well, picture this. We're living longer than ever before. Our happily ever afters are stretching into marathon territory. What's more, most of us are in denial about our marital issues until they're practically taller than the Empire State Building. Dr. Jacobs, how can a relationship end with seemingly no warning?
Well, actually, the vast majority of relationships end with some amount of warning. But probably the most common one is that people have a kind of innate sense that something is going wrong, that they begin to feel distant. They don't tend to feel the same way with their partner, with their spouse, their girlfriend, or their boyfriend. But after that, the things to watch out for are, there are actually many, many of them. Of course, huge changes in your sexual life. One person being dissatisfied sexually, or both people being dissatisfied sexually, not being able to have much fun together, not being able to talk together, not being able to open up and be honest and direct with each other. And probably the thing that kills most relationships is resentment. That is, getting into arguments and fights that don't have a resolution that actually makes you as a member of a team feel that we're getting somewhere, that you were heard, that the solution has been found, or that even if there's no solution, that you're both equally living with whatever discomfort you have, and it's okay. If you end an argument feeling you got absolutely nowhere, or feeling that actually you feel worse now that you've had the argument, your relationship's in trouble.
Conflict, the battle royale of relationships. It's fascinating how we can turn a simple disagreement into a full-blown war, complete with emotional artillery. How do breakups happen?
How does that happen? It happens a whole host of reasons. The most common one is that people deteriorate when they're having a fight and stop talking about the issue and start making it personal. And they start saying mean and nasty and particularly devaluing things to each other. When that happens, almost always the relationship is in big trouble.
What are the best ways to heal a broken heart?
Let's just talk about high school, college breakups. Many people will tell you, many adults will tell you, that the greatest single love of their life was their boyfriend or girlfriend in college or in high school. Why should this be so? Because under the effect of adolescence and young adulthood, new sexuality, situations where the weight of the world is not on you, okay, although high school and college are, of course, difficult things to get through, you can fall madly in love with somebody. And most of these relationships don't get to the phase where people have to have children and live together through the mundane stress, everyday stresses of everyday life. And so when they break up before they've experienced the kind of typical loss of love that goes over, let's say, in a relationship, or I don't want to say loss of love, but a kind of evening out of those passionate feelings that happen in long-term relationships. And when they break up, what usually has happened in these early relationships is that the dream of that particular relationship has never been fulfilled. And the absence of its fulfillment means that it was still a possibility. And it's very hard to let that possibility go. And though a person will tell you, well, I never really knew what it was like to live with her, or I never knew what it was like to live with him, I've always had this dream that that would have been the greatest relationship for a whole host of reasons. So it's very hard when these early relationships break up. And I've actually seen in my practice more seriously depressed college students after a breakup than seriously depressed divorcees, let's say, in their 40s and 50s. Okay, that is the profound nature of what is lost, that dream, is enormous to kids who are going through those breakups. On the other hand, marriage is a completely different kettle of fish. When we get married, we actually stand up in front of society and in front of each other, in front of our families and our friends, and we say to each other, in essence, you know that dream you have about the way you're going to live the rest of your life? We're in it with you. We're making a commitment to you. And though we all know that marriage is an enormous risk today, that a significant number of marriages are going to end in divorce, and even more are going to end in, let's say, dissatisfaction, unhappiness, when we take that step and when we choose to have children together, we very, very much believe in our hearts that it's possible for us.
Yeah, marriage, the ultimate commitment. It's like signing a lifelong contract, but instead of the fine print, it's a, I promise to do the dishes at least 5 times a week.
And when that doesn't work, when that commitment and that merging of our life with the other person, both financially and in terms of our personal histories and our children, when that breaks up, that is, in fact, no matter how difficult the marriage was, usually a very, very devastating experience. So they're both very difficult for different reasons.
How do breakups differ from divorce?
Time. There are all kinds of things that people can do, but the truth of the matter is that any major loss in life requires time. And for the person who's traumatized by that loss, in the moment while it's happening or in the first few days after it happens, imagine a sudden death in your life. There is nothing that you can say or do that is going to make the person believe that over time, things will slowly get better. And the worse the trauma, that is, the more you invested in the relationship, the more you believe that this was going to be it for you, the more you fantasized or projected or dreamed about it going into the future, the worse the trauma is and the longer it's going to take.
Dealing with loss in a relationship. Well, it's like attending the emotional Olympics. Gold medal for moving on, silver for closure, and bronze for surviving your ex's texts.
However, besides time, there are also things that you can do. If you think about death, what do we do when somebody dies? We get surrounded by our friends, we get surrounded by our relatives, and we look to people to kind of support us. And if somebody has had a bad breakup, the first thing they should do is call their friends and go nuts, you know, and just talk about it and get angry and get sad and cry and go through that whole experience that one has to go through in order to get through any kind of loss.
Yeah, I think seeking support after a breakup is crucial. You know, it's like forming your own emotional A team. I love it when, you know, my own support system comes together.
After that, there are things that you can do, of course, that probably everybody knows, but I can mention them. You take good care of yourself. You do good things for yourself. You go get a manicure. You go get your hair done. You go and buy yourself, you know, you don't go crazy shopping, but you do nice things for yourself. And remember that the reason that you have broken up, more likely than not, doesn't in and of itself have that much to do with just you.
Is it a good idea to see a therapist while going through a breakup?
Generally, no. Generally, I don't think that just because people break off relationships they should feel that they need to be in therapy. But I, in general, don't think a lot of people should be in therapy, so I don't push therapy on anybody. Loss is part of human experience. Death is part of human experience. And anyone who's willing to have the nerve to get into a relationship has to also recognize that relationships can end. All relationships have risk. Even today, if you get married, there are enormous risks that it can end. So just because you're upset because a relationship has ended doesn't mean that you should be in therapy any more than you should go to therapy if your partner dies. Now, what are the exceptions to that rule? The exceptions to that rule would be if over a period of time, you don't feel any better. If things don't start to improve. If you're not able to function because you can't get out of bed. Now what we would say is that the loss has precipitated actually a dysfunctional state, a depression. Those are the kinds of things that you have to think about for therapy. Another reason to get into therapy is if you're trying to have a relationship and the relationships keep breaking up on you against your will for no reason whatsoever that you can understand. If you're caught in some kind of repetitive pattern, multiple women are leaving you or multiple men are leaving you, or no one satisfies you. That is, you find that you're in relationships with people who really care about you and love you and who you know in your head are decent, good people, and you say to yourself, well, he's not enough, or she's not enough, she's not pretty enough, he doesn't make enough money, whatever it is, and you seriously think that you want a relationship to move into the future, you want a family of some kind. If you're stuck in that kind of repetitive pattern, and you're, let's say, reaching your mid-30s or early 30s, or if you already know you're in that pattern, whatever age you are, there's a really good chance you're not going to get into that kind of relationship. And if you don't find out what it's all about sooner than later, you might end up getting past the point where getting into a good relationship would be useful to you. So that's when you could go for therapy.
When a relationship ends, how can a guy just walk away? How is that possible?
There's no simple answer. But in general, very often when a guy ends a relationship, he wants a clean break. And one of the things he doesn't want to have to deal with, remember going back to the question about guilt, he doesn't want to have to deal with the woman's unhappiness. And if he contacts her, what's going to happen is that he's going to start to feel guilty. She's going to say things or do things either to make him feel responsible for ending the creation. Like, how could you do this to us? Wasn't it wonderful? And this is going to make him feel responsible for her and for her unhappiness, and he isn't going to want to deal with it. So one of the reasons men walk away is that they want cleanliness in their emotional life. They don't want all that kind of messy emotional stuff, and they don't want to have to feel guilty. Another reason men walk away and they don't kind of, first of all, there's two more reasons that you can think of. One is that some men are real jerks. And there are jerks out there, and you have to be very careful about being in a relationship with a jerk. And some men are walking around because they don't care very much about you or your feelings. The other reason men will walk away is that if they perceive that the woman wants the relationship more than the man, they believe that by continuing to be in contact with her, they actually make it harder for her. That is, the wound doesn't heal until she finally accepts it's over. And they know that. So they assume that every time they make a phone call and she engages him again on the phone or they go out to dinner together or something like that, it actually is not making it easier for her to accept it. What it's doing is bringing up the feelings, and she has to start all over again in the healing process. And a lot of guys don't want to be responsible for that.
How can a girl just walk away?
I think that their reasoning is pretty much the same. I think it's much less common, but there are now a fair number of women who are very clear about what they want and very, very self-sufficient. And when a woman is making her own money, knows what she wants in life, and is dissatisfied with a relationship, she will very often just walk away and say, I've had it. But it, in my experience, it's usually because she's been really disappointed by something that the guy has done. The vast majority of divorces today are precipitated by women. Dissatisfied, unhappy women.
How do some couples make it after 50 years?
Well, I guess we'd all like to know that. And there are studies being done of people who have stayed married for a very long time. One thing we know for sure is that these couples usually are very committed to staying in a marriage. But it's also true that there are many couples who have stayed married for very long periods of time for a host of reasons besides that they're happy and satisfied. There are lots of reasons to stay married. There are economic reasons to stay married. There are cultural and social reasons to stay married. There are issues that have to do with security. And there are issues that have to do with your sense of yourself. It is an arc. In this world, it's actually still easier to function as a married person than as a single person. But there are couples that over time have learned to deal with their differences. My theory is that the biggest issue in marriage is managing differences. Everybody ultimately turns out to be not you. When we fall in love, we have the assumption that they're pretty much going to be just like me and go along with everything I want in life. And love comes, real love comes, when you realize that this is a completely different person who has a different style, different reactions to things, often different agendas, different likes and different dislikes. And you can really relate to this person and love this person anyway. And usually, by the way, these differences show up when you're under stress. When a couple is dealing with difficult things, they find out that they're actually different. And probably the most common thing that teaches them they're different is having children and the stress of raising children. That's where they learn that they're really very, very different. And if couples can manage their differences without being critical of each other and figure out how to resolve the stressful situation, they very often can get through the tough times and then rediscover each other as they get older and have a wonderful time together. And by the way, probably about 25% of married couples manage to do it.
Does love at first sight exist?
No. First of all, it really depends on what you mean by love. I just define love, mature love, as being able to love another person once you've discovered, once the anesthesia of love at first sight wears off. Chris Rock has a wonderful line. He says, when two people meet each other, it's my representative meeting your representative. And it takes literally about 3 months for those representatives to be pushed out of the picture, sometimes even longer, and for the real person to emerge from the background. So love at first sight is when my representative is in love with your representative. It doesn't really have to do with who you really are. I have no idea who you are. But usually it's happened because there's something about you that fascinates me. People fall in love with celebrities all the time because there's something about being a celebrity that makes a person think, God, if I was in love with that person and that person was in love with me, my life would completely change. I would be an important person. I'd be, let's say, the husband of an important person or the wife of an important person. And so there's this immediate sense of gratification and fulfillment in the fantasy. And what can happen to a celebrity can happen to you across a crowded room. I see this good-looking guy or this beautiful woman, or I start talking to somebody who has a particular sense of humor, or I've heard something, and just something snaps, and we become incredibly infatuated very quickly. One of the most dangerous, painful, and wonderful things about human existence is that we fall deeply in love with people before we know who these people really are. It gets us tremendous joy and pleasure. It also causes us, in the long run, a lot of trouble.
Why do some people reach out to you after they've left?
Because, in fact, there are some relationships that break up, not because there are big fundamental problems in the relationship, but because of a whole host of things like, let's say, timing, or not being sure, or not being ready. For example, I mean, let's say you have a wonderful relationship with somebody, and the woman gets a job and she moves from New York to California. And you decide, by the way, this happens all the time when kids go to school from high school. So it's the same thing, you know, they're madly in love and they're senior in high school, and then one goes to Duke and the other goes to Boston, okay, or something like that. And they decide in some way that they want to be free to move on in life because it just doesn't make sense to try and hold it together. But then let's say the person who moves to California from New York and the person who's in New York starts looking around and starts checking out other possibilities and starts to miss the person who's away and says to themselves, wait a second, just because a person's moved to California, maybe this, and this was such a good relationship, I don't want to miss this, bro. I don't want to lose this person. And so a lot of relationships get back together, even without that being the reason, just because people recognize after a split that the relationship actually was a very good one. You hear all the time from people that they look back at relationships and they'll like smack their head, you know, like I should have had a V8, you know. They say something like, I don't know why I left that guy. I just think I wasn't ready. I wasn't right.
Okay, for our listeners out there who are really pining after their ex, what are some of the signs that can tell them that it's really over?
I don't think there's a particular sign. One sign would be that the person who you're pining away for does not suggest that it's going to happen, doesn't leave the door open. That's why sometimes people who break up relationships don't want to be in contact with you, because they're afraid that you will take that as the suggestion it's going to work, kind of like you're grasping for straws. Let me just say one thing in terms of that. The one thing I would suggest to most people who feel that a relationship has been ended against their will is that they accept it. I think it's a very big mistake for a person who has been told that the relationship is over to try and fight that or spend too much time hoping that you're going to get it back. The other thing you have to remember is that when you feel that you have been dumped, when you feel that a relationship is ended, that you did not want to end, the person who has been left suffers certain kinds of emotional traumas. They often begin to feel that there's something wrong with them. They often begin to feel that the fantasy they had about a relationship has been prematurely interrupted. And their notion of how to restore everything from the dream to their self-esteem depends on the image of getting the other person back to more or less say, I'm sorry, I'll undo the trauma for you. And so there's a constant wish that the trauma can be undone. For many people, they will tell you, you know, I don't really want him back, but I want him to come back and want to be back so that then I can break up with him, because I can't stand the fact that I have to live with the fact that he broke up with me.
Let's talk about self-esteem. It's like the stock market of emotions. It rises, it falls, and sometimes it feels like we're checking our emotional portfolio a little bit too often. So after someone's been dumped, what's the best way to get, you know, their self-esteem back?
The most important thing is to remember that our feelings of attraction and love for different people is extremely idiosyncratic. I always tell my patients that if you go out to my waiting room and open up Vogue magazine, and we get five guys and we flip through Vogue magazine, probably very few of those five guys will even agree on who they think is an attractive woman in Vogue magazine. And they're all models. One guy will say that, I don't know how you can think she's attractive. And yet they're all, let's say, very well-known models, okay? So if that is that idiosyncratic, if we're all so different, then what makes for a relationship? Why I should be in love with you? Why I should be able to have a relationship with you? All of the nuances of all the different styles and agendas in life are so complex that to believe that it's your fault that this relationship has broken up actually in reality makes little sense. Now, there are times when it does make sense, and we can talk about that in a minute. But once you've decided that there's not much you can do about who falls in love with you and who doesn't, who wants to have a relationship with you and who doesn't, besides be the best partner that you can be, then your self-esteem ought to be able to maintain itself, even after a breakup. I mean, it's the same, if you call up a woman and you'd say, I'd like to go out for dinner tonight, and you go out for dinner and you call her a second time because you want to go out again, and she says, look, I really don't think it's a good idea. Should you feel like there's something terribly wrong with you? Because she's not interested. It could be that she doesn't like the color of your hair, or she doesn't like the way your face looks, or she doesn't like what you do for a living. It could be anything. There's no way to know. So if you let your self-esteem suffer over a relationship, then letting yourself become too vulnerable.
Ah, vulnerability, the gateway drug to relationships. It's like we put on our emotional superhero cape only to realize that it's made of tissue paper. What can they do to feel better?
The exception to the rule is that some relationships end after a lot of conflict. And in a lot of conflict, what happens is that, unfortunately, people blame each other for the problem. Almost all conflict in marriages has the finger of blame pointing outward. It's rarely, I'm having a problem with this, and I know it's a problem, and I'm sorry that I'm causing so much trouble for you. This is how you could be helpful to me. It's you're doing this, you're doing that, and it's all your fault. And if you would just be different, everything would be better.
Blame, the hottest potato in relationships. It's a game we play where nobody wants to catch that potato, but we just keep tossing it back and forth.
Now, if you've broken up in a relationship where there's a lot of conflict and you don't want it to end, it's very hard not to hear those tapes of your partner telling you that this has all happened and it's your fault. And that affects your self-esteem. You start to think, maybe there's something wrong with me. Now, the way people get out of it is they say, well, it's actually none of my fault. It's all his or her fault. They just in their head say, you know, he's a jerk. It wasn't really me, and I don't have to listen to anything he said. And of course, the reality is it's someplace in between. So if your self-esteem is really suffering after a relationship is broken up, it's probably because you've decided in some way that there's something you need to work on, and that's something you can consider. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad person.
How can someone tell if someone is a commitment phobe?
I think that men have become very good at playing the game of being in relationships, even though they're not in it for the long haul. They stay in it for the long time. Let's face it, guys, and by the way, lots of women these days, not necessarily women in their very early 30s, but women who are, you know, divorced and who have had a lot of relationships. Many people are in relationships today for brief periods of time to see how the relationship goes, to have some fun, and frequently to have some companionship and sex. And that's just a reality of life. And one of the big issues, I think, for people today is recognizing that reality, accepting that reality, and if you're going to be in those kinds of relationships, monitoring what's going on and being able to take care of your own heart and not get too hurt, not get steps ahead of the person you're in the relationship with. How can you spot a person ahead of time? Only if they're being honest and direct with you. Now, I assume that what you mean by ahead of time is that before they start showing that they're commitment phobes. Because sooner or later, people will begin to behave as if they're pulling away. And it usually happens at the very moment when you're feeling the closest in the relationship, beginning to feel very attached to them. You say something that lets them know how attached you are. You behave in a way that seems very particularly loving and attached. And then suddenly the phone calls start to be less often and the person becomes a little less available or is a little less communicative. One final thought about commitment phobes. I think it's actually an overblown scenario in this sense. For most people, it's really not that they're afraid of commitment in the sense of an emotional attachment to someone. They're really afraid of where this emotional attachment leads. We live in a world where divorce has given marriage and long-term relationships such a terrible name that many people, both men and women, but much more men in general than women, for reasons that we don't have to get into but may be obvious to you, are actually quite afraid of getting married. It seems like highly risky behavior these days, walking down the aisle. It's risky because you can get very seriously emotionally hurt when you get divorced. You can have children who have difficulty when you get divorced, and you can financially be seriously emotionally hurt. And that is why many, many people today, before they get married, get prenuptial agreements, because they're already aware that there's a really good chance that they're going to get divorced, and they want to minimize the amount of trauma and hurt they're experiencing. So when we talk about commitment phobes, we have to be able to distinguish those people who are afraid to be emotionally attached from those people who really don't want to be too attached because they know in certain circumstances that attachment will ultimately lead to their partner wanting to get married. And it's not that they don't want to be attached, they just don't really want to get married.
Dr. Jacobs, give us a little pep talk.
If a person has gone through a very, very serious breakup and is having a really rough time, I think I can say with almost 100% certainty that virtually everybody ultimately gets over it. That the good thing is that you will heal, and there are probably, if you can spend some time thinking about it, valuable lessons to be learned from what happened in this relationship. The one thing I would suggest, though, is that you not let it jade you for the rest of your life. There are many people who have suffered terrible traumas, by the way, more often in divorces than in breakups where there's no marriage, where they're so hurt by the loss of their marriage or what's happened to their marriage, that either they're never willing to get married again, or when they do get married, the virus of the previous relationship already begins to infect the new relationship because they're less trustful, they're waiting to be betrayed, they're overreactive to the slightest nuance of the problem that reminded them of the previous marriage. So, for example, if you happen to be married to a woman who you thought was very bossy, the moment your next relationship says something like, would it be possible for you to, bam, the guy's right out. He won't tolerate any demand, any pressure being put on him. He needs to be left alone because it immediately reminds him of his feeling that he was just being nagged and bossed in his previous marriage. And likewise, if your previous husband left you having an affair with another woman, if your boyfriend doesn't call you at 5 o'clock and only calls you at 10 o'clock that night, your mind will immediately start spinning out of control, wondering where he is. Here we go, it's happening all over again. And so getting these things under control and understanding them before you get into the next relationship is really critical. But over time, most people end up doing just fine and okay.
Just like, why are relationships so difficult these days?
First of all, one of the things we're talking about is long-term relationships. Long-term relationships now have to last, if they're going to last a lifetime, twice or three times as long as they had to last, let's say, when marriage was first invented as a social institution. I mean, marriage goes back thousands of years to a time when the average person died, you know, if they died at old age, they might have been 27 or 30 years old. It's well established during the Middle Ages that the vast majority of women died before they were 30 years old. So when they said to death do us part, they meant like, you know, maybe 10 years from 13 to 23 or 27, something like that. Today, a marriage that starts in its 20s could conceivably last 70 years. My parents are married 70 years, okay, and they're still alive at 95 and 90. So to maintain a marriage that long requires skills that all the previous generations of human beings never really needed to develop. They didn't need to develop them because they were, in a sense, forced to stay together for the most part, no matter what. They were forced by economic necessity to stay together. They were forced because of just the pure issues of survival to stay together. They were forced to stay together for thousands of years by religious demands on them. They were forced by social contracts. Most marriage was not about love. It was about finding somebody who would enhance your ability to survive in life. Even if you were very wealthy, most marriages were made between financial houses and lords and ladies to establish a way to become more powerful in life. It wasn't about love. Love comes into it only in the last couple of hundred years. And one way to argue it is that love has actually ruined marriage. Because now that none of these glues hold us together as a couple, the only glue that actually holds us together is our feeling of satisfaction in the relationship.
Pink Wisdom is produced by me, Allison Chase, and Sam Ufret, edited by Sam Ufret, and recorded by Andrew Thomas at Noia House in New York City. You can find more episodes of Pink Wisdom at pinkwisdom.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next week.